This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a capaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Sometimes referred to as Jerry and Joe. And we've also coined ourselves this morning, Jerry and Bruno.
Jerry and Bruno.
Sal Capaccio J&B. Joining us on the Wester Hotline. That stems from Sal. I was telling Joe, after I was referred to as Jerry on all the shouty shows for our show, that my name was almost Jerry, and Joe revealed his name was almost Bruno.
Yeah.
You have that? Your parents ever tell you, like, we thought about naming you this
blank
instead?
Ooh. No, wait, you really were almost Jerry, though? I'm fascinated by
that. I was almost Jerome, yeah. My dad wanted Jerome.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
My mom wanted Jeremiah, and they compromised on Jeremy.
No, I don't think so. I probably always was going to be Salvatore. My brother, my dad's name is John. My brother was John also, so that was already out, right? So now we get to Salvatore is my grandfather's name. So I think that was already kind of,
yeah,
it was always in line, you know what I mean?
This reminds me of one thing before we get to Elijah Moore. Sal, how about this story about the Ulbrichts and the Falcons defensive coordinator, yeah, Jeff Ulbrich. His son is the one that's responsible for filming and doing this prank call to Shedeur Sanders. The NFL investigates. They find the Falcons wrong for not protecting phone numbers. They find the Falcons $250,000, and they find Jeff Ulbrich, the Falcons defensive coordinator, $100,000. That is a tough day at work for,
yeah,
Jeff Ulbrich, and a tough day for the kid. Sorry, Dad, I cost you $100,000, and your work is going to have to pay $250,000.
Right, and I don't know, Sal, you know, because like $250,000 the Atlanta Falcons is probably nothing, but how much does Jeff Ulbrich make?
I
like,
mean,
coordinators in the league, I'm sure, make like a million or...
Sure,
but it's a
but
much larger percentage of his salary.
It's a chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably, let's just say it's 1.5. I don't know, is he up to 2? I'm not really sure, but let's just say that's what it is. It's a pretty good chunk of his salary right there. It's a lot of chores around the house for that kid to make it up, I'll tell you that.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, you're paying me back, son. Listen, I think hopefully a lot of lessons were learned here. There's no doubt about that. You hope people understand. I did see the apology from the young man, and
yeah,
you know, I'm the kind of person, I don't run right to, oh yeah, hollow apology. Like, I hope he understood what he did was wrong. And, you know, he's a young person, and I feel a lot of empathy for these guys, a lot of these guys that this happened to. But what's interesting to me is the fines were not because of the prank call. The fines were because of the leaked information, the leaked phone number. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't the act that actually got the fine.
Yeah.
It was more of the, you let this happen in order to lead up to the person doing it.
Which there's a point to be made here, Sal.
Yeah,
The league is, of course, sending a message about how seriously they're going to take that kind of security to keep things there. And for what it's worth, the Falcons have been fined a lot. Like, the Atlanta Falcons seem to be an organization. They got hit with the tampering stuff, right? It might have even been it's you again, Falcons. We're going to hit you really hard on this.
Yeah, you're right. Repeat offender, right, in a situation like this. So we'll see. It is interesting to think of it that way for sure. But hopefully, like I said, a lot of lessons learned. And, you know, it is a very big chunk, like you said, for something like this.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. All right, Sal, so yesterday, Elijah Moore, which is not exactly a huge surprise. Brandon Bean had said during the week that they had him in for a visit prior to the draft, put a pin in it, wait till after, see how things go in the draft. And then they revisit Moore, who signs a one-year deal. We were getting into the weeds of that tender the Browns threw on him, and I was even after like discussing it, I was a little fuzzy on it all. So, how does it work now? Okay. He signs with the Bills 1 year, up to five. We don't know the numbers on the guarantee. I think a lot of speculation is the guarantee would be at least what that tender number would have been, but I don't know that that's necessarily true.
Agreed. So let's start with the money and how that would work for the Bills. So he was guaranteed, let's just say 3.5 to round it up a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Maybe a little over 3.4. He was guaranteed 3.5 by the Browns if he had not signed with anybody by July 22nd. They were the only team that he could negotiate with, and he would go back to them, and he would play on that number, essentially. Okay, so any team he could sign with, basically he could sign with any amount of money. That team could say, come here, and you know we'll give you that money, and you come here and play. And he goes, okay. Or maybe in this case, we'll find out, the Bills said, we're not going to give you that guarantee, but we're going to give you a chance to make more than that guarantee. So we'll give you, let's say, 2.5, but a chance to make $5 million. And he goes, you know what, I'm going to bet on myself. I'll take less guarantees, but I think that I can do well in this offense. I got Josh Allen thrown to me. I'll be able to hit those incentives. So maybe that's why. He could sign for any number he wants for any team, but he always had that in his back pocket that if he didn't sign, he could go back to the Browns, $3.5 million guaranteed. Okay, because the Browns put the unrestricted free agent tender on him, last Monday, it wasn't today, I think when May 1st was thrown on, I even said it the other day, because draft was a little earlier this year. It's the Monday after the draft is when the deadline is. So this past Monday was the deadline for any free agents to sign with teams that count in the comp pick formula. So that was done, except for this situation where a team puts this UFA tender. He's in a unique situation. Because he signed when he did, it was up until July 22nd where that could still count. Because he signed, he still counts on the comp pick formula. However, if you go to Over the Cap, they do a really good job of this. They actually already have a running tally of qualifying free agents you've added and qualifying free agents that you've had sign elsewhere.
Okay.
He's not going to matter for the Bills. They've already outweighed themselves when it comes to gains versus losses.
Right.
So it's not like signing Elijah Moore all of a sudden makes them, well, we're not going to get any comp picks next year.
They weren't going to get any.
They weren't going to get Kenny comp picks next year.
Yeah, because they signed Hoyt, Ogunjobi, Bosa, yeah. Palmer. Right, right. Okay.
That's right. Now, what I would say is he's got a one-year deal. He plays out that deal. If he signs next year as a free agent, he will count for the Bills comp pick formula as a free agent lost if it is a worthy enough contract.
We'll see how he fits in, Sal. But, you know, anytime the Bills bring somebody in on a short-term deal, it could always go well enough to bring him back. I like this player's skill set and the fit. And, you know, we've talked endlessly about the receiver position and how the Bills value it or if it's appropriate. But there's one thing here with Moore that it lines up with a couple things they've done. Getting someone where it looks like the skill set is worthy of a second-round pick. He's a former second-round pick. But it's never really worked for him, whether it's in New York or with Cleveland. He's been unhappy at times, and I've got reports and reading things on scouting reports where he gets open and he's a route technician and he's got good speed. He's one of these guys that maybe you draft in a dynasty league and you wonder, when is this ever going to happen? And if he held on this long, good job, because I think this is a good fit and I think it could really work out well for Elijah Moore.
Yeah, the player himself, let's go back to the 2022 draft, and you guys remember, I mean, that was a player that a lot of people had mocked to the Bills.
Yeah.
A lot of people had talked about the Bills. I joked with Shope last night when I was on with Shope and the Bulldog that I think Mike talked about Elijah Moore as much as he talks about Luther Burden this year. You know, I mean, like, he was all about him. A lot of people were, and I understood why. I mean, he was a guy that brought a lot of, you know, the kind of skill set the Bills needed. I don't think at that time the wide receiver train was starting on the tracks yet.
It was.
It was like the very beginning.
It was.
Like, yeah.
It was. I only know that because, you know, like that's you said 2022 was that year?
Yeah. 2021.
2021, yeah.
Because the Rousseau draft. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the year they take Basham in the second round. So it was just getting started. But anyway, go ahead.
They didn't have – I'm trying to think. They had that year – yeah, okay. So I'm just, anyway, either way, the point is, on the draft that year, he was very much a fit for the Bills, a lot of people thought. And when the Bills didn't take him, I remember a lot of people being – or the Bills didn't get him in some capacity – people being mad, oh, my God, they blew it, they should have got this guy, and that's fine. That's what we do after the draft. Well, he's now been on two teams, and he's not like this superstar wide receiver, but he has put up some production in offenses that haven't had very good quarterback play, right, through the Jets for 2 years, through the Browns for 2 years. So I think it's kind of really how you want to look at the perspective of what he really is still and can be in the NFL. It is a good lesson, though, in – just because we have these thoughts about these guys, these skill sets coming out of the draft, doesn't mean it's always the best fit. Doesn't mean that the player's always going to be, you know, able to hit right away. So now the Bills do have him. And it's also a good lesson what you just said about Brandon Bean. They had him in for a draft. Laviska Shenault's the same thing here. Brandon Bean told us about Laviska Shenault. Now we also know about, you know, what he says about Elijah Moore. These guys, when you have a general manager and a front office staff that's been together this long, this is one of the advantages. You get notes on guys, you have, you know, files and folders on guys and everything, scouting reports, that if you're still in your job when they become a free agent, when they become available for a trade, you can really refer back to that and go, wait a minute, what did we all think about him? And it makes it much more streamlined to have a consensus of if you should bring him into your building or not. If Brandon Bean was not the general manager of the Bills this year, if he had, you know, left or been gone or whatever over the last couple of years, you don't have that necessarily, but it's the same quarterback, it's the same head coach, the same front office that says, how does he fit now? Because guess what, we can refer right back to 4 years ago and how he fit. Let's see where his career has gone. So yeah, now as far as the fit is concerned, look, I mean, I put out my updated graph, you guys see it, the roster right now, there's 89 players in the roster counting the UDFAs are going to bring in it reportedly. I think he's in the top five, right? To me, it's in whatever order you want to put him. I think it's Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Joshua Palmer, Curtis Samuel, and Elijah Moore. The only question would be, does he become four or five? And does Curtis Samuel become four or five? And do you leave the door open for someone other than them, Tyrell Shavers, Laviska Shenault, someone like that, to say, no, I'm going to bump one of you out of your spot?
Yeah, I mean, it might be bold to predict that Elijah Moore jumps higher than that, but I do think there's a point here that Joe's been making a lot about Mac Hollins' vacated snaps. Right, when they bring in Mac Hollins, I don't know that they expect him to be the guy that ends up with the most touchdowns or to outlast MVS or Claypool. I mean, those guys were minimal investments, and Hollins got like $2 million or whatever.
And to be on the field the most.
Right, Keon Coleman. Like, last year, it was a bit of Curtis Samuel got paid, and Samuel was not a big contributor last year early in the season because of an injury. So what I guess what I want to get to, Sal, is while the odds might be wide receiver 4/5, I think it's pretty confident. We should be pretty confident Shakir is one, and Coleman's going to get his opportunities. But past that, I do think that there is an opening for Moore to establish, if he's as good as he's supposed to be, a route runner, a technician, that he might form a rapport with Allen. And I don't think that the ceiling is 4 or 5. I think that the floor, obviously, is 4 or 5.
I wouldn't disagree with that. A lot of time between now and then. We'll see what happens. I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about Curtis Samuel's spot, and look, I find it hard right now, and it's certainly never out of the question, find it hard right now to believe they would move on from Curtis Samuel after with the money that they're giving him right now, with the way that they've talked about how last year's injury impacted him. I think he's still going to be, you know, very much relied on and count upon to be a part of the offense, but it doesn't certainly mean that he has to be above Elijah Moore when it's all said and done. Elijah Moore could be above him. I think it's hard for me to envision Elijah Moore being above Khalil Shakir or Keon Coleman. We know not Shakir, right? Shakir's just kind of that guy that they just paid. They view him as their number one in that regard, with just like the most consistent guy on the field a lot, targets, things like that. And I mean, and if he does jump Keon Coleman, that's a Keon Coleman problem.
Yeah.
That is not because Elijah Moore became great, right? The Bills need and want Keon Coleman to be their true outside X receiver. From there, I do think anything's open, guys. And Now you're talking about Joshua Palmer, Elijah Moore, who in a lot of ways are similar players, to be quite honest with you, for all the things that you're talking about. And, you know, separators, able to get down the field. And they do it in different ways maybe at times, but that's right. And then, of course, Curtis Samuel, like I said. And then you do have to leave a little spot open for, okay, does Laviska Shenault show enough as a kick returner that they say, we got to keep this guy on the roster? There's no rule that says you only have to keep five receivers. You could keep him as a sixth receiver slash kick returner, and then maybe he just steals a few snaps, you know, once it comes time for game day.
Right, especially for Coleman. You know, you talk about how if it was him over Coleman, that it would be more of a Coleman thing. The point about Hollins and vacated snaps, what are a lot of those snaps? He's on the field because of his ability as a blocker, mm-hmm. and because the Bills have built this run game that they trust, and they want their receivers to be able to block, and Hollins was good for that. And that's Elijah Moore is a lot of things that I'm excited about. I don't think that's why he's here at all. So Coleman maybe kind of has that role carved out for him if he's ready to take it more than he did last year. And Sal, that kind of goes to, like, can all five of these guys coexist? That was something Mike Clay was asking yesterday on Twitter from ESPN. Like, does this mean anything for Curtis Samuel? Because often you go down to 4 or 5 on the depth chart at wide receiver, and somebody's got to be able to play special teams. And last year for the Bills, that was Hollins. So, I don't know. All five of these guys also got on the field. Like, you look at the snap counts, the AFC Championship game, Samuel, Cooper, Coleman, Hollins, Shakir, they all played in that AFC Championship game. So do you think that is a point that matters, that some one of those five, for that to be the five that plays on game day, somebody's got to be able to play on special teams?
If that's the five, I mean, I think in some capacity you probably need that. But look, I think I go back to what Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean talked about, you know, over the last couple of months with the new kick rules and things like that. They may have to put a little bit more of a premium on just core special teams players. And that being said, maybe, yeah, you want your guys to be able to. I've always said your fifth receiver has to play special teams. So I do think that. But what is that special teams role? Is that a gunner, right? That's generally a lot of times what it can be. But it doesn't have to be if you carve out other roles for guys around the roster doing that. They brought in a lot of corners. Right? Look at the corner group right now. Maybe you keep an extra corner, something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's tough, Joe, because they're not true special teams players. I don't think it has to be. There's no hard, fast rule that says those guys have to be it, but it's certainly ideal. The ideal situation is your fifth wide receiver plays special teams because he's not going to be on the field enough to justify being your fifth wide receiver, right? Especially on game day. I think also, though, I think there's a point here to be made about the tight end they drafted, which is Jackson Hawes. And when you talk about the snaps being vacated by Hollins, and he's such a blocking guy, well, you have a blocking guy now that actually is a pass catcher. He's not going to go out and be a pass catcher. He's not going to be split out and, you know, this flex tight end. It's not what he does. But you now have a bit of a way that you can use your personnel grouping with a tight end who's able to block instead of having it be that extra wide receiver and not bringing in the extra offensive lineman.
Sal Capaccio. Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal, updating us on Elijah Moore. Quick note here, just because, you know, we've had ourselves a week. And Tyler Dunn just released a Q&A with Brandon Bean, and they talk a lot about the receiver stuff, and in it being, again, misrepresents what we said the morning of the draft, which, whatever. I don't think he has to care what we think about it. But I'm going to give you one updated thing here. I was just looking up. The Bills did not have to draft Jalen Royals. They definitely didn't have to get Matthew Golden. But the point about we're all just making there about how this all plays out, what if Elijah Moore doesn't make the team? You'd say, wow, I mean, I guess that means that Samuel and Coleman and everybody looks really good and they need their special teams guy. And did the Bills just burn $3.5 million on the cap because they were just a little bit light? That they burned $5 million on the cap? We don't know the full numbers. Samuel, he was a 3-year deal. Year one, halfway into it, we're thinking like, man, I wish this wasn't a 3-year deal because you're paying him $8 million a season. Now maybe they can still get something out of that. Palmer, 3 years for like $10 million. Half of the point I was making to Brandon Bean that he didn't want to hear or didn't want to talk about because he was mad people were talking about receiver. He just didn't want to hear it. He's frustrated. Okay. Jalen Royals, who was taken in the 4th round by the Chiefs. Forget the Chiefs. Forget that it's Jalen Royals. This is about the business of the NFL. His contract is 4 years for a total of $5
million. Total of five.
A total of five.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work out, what's your cap hit? Who cares? And this is true of defensive tackle, too. If Bean wants to play that game at defensive tackle, if he wants to play that game at corner, that's fine. When you're making draft picks,
it's kind of funny. We think about draft picks as busts and, well, you blew that pick. In reality, blowing a draft pick is blowing a pick, but it never really hurts you on the cap. Who cares? Kyer Elam was not some sort of cap damage the Bills had to deal with. It's a wasted spot. It's a wasted pick. But especially third, fourth, fifth, sixth rounds, like, you're not getting any cap damage. If Curtis Samuel doesn't make a difference, I'm on the hook for $8 million a year on a guy that's not making a difference. If Josh Palmer doesn't make a difference, $10 million a year. What's Keon Coleman? 4 years, 10 total. It is good business to work in the draft, and this position is the second most expensive position. So that's why, when we're going to the draft every year, you might be sick of the receiver train. You might think this big board behind me, you guys are talking so much receiver. That board was from last year. Drafting two last year would have been smart. Drafting the position that is the most expensive, that is not quarterback, and since you're already set at quarterback, this will be the hardest position to fill financially because of the market. The draft is where you can get that money back. Why are the Bills always in cap trouble? Why are they always strung up against the cap? Didn't they just reset it? Here they are again. Well, there's not that much room. Why are they still there? It is not because Josh Allen gets a lot of money. A lot of teams have that situation. Mm-hmm. That's all. A lot of this conversation boiled down to, you should be taking this position more often. It would be good for your cap. It would be good for your potential floor and ceiling. It would give you more flexibility. And that's kind of what we wanted to get to. It's the opposite of the running back point, where, sure, they're replaceable. You think receivers are replaceable? That's fine. But there's money to be saved in just drafting them. So that's all. And with that, we don't really get to close it. Now we're going to eat beef jerky. No,
yes.
We're going to talk with a Jets reporter on Elijah Moore. And
then we'll eat beef jerky.
Yes, and then we'll eat some beef jerky. Josh made beef jerky for us today. And we also got to get the Derby horse that is the official Derby horse of the morning show. Jerry and Bruno's Derby picks.
Let's go.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. You can give us a call on Elijah Moore. When we return, we're going to get a thought from a Jets reporter again to talk about Moore and what went wrong there, because that was the spot he was before Cleveland. John.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we started together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Butchko, Locked On Jets on Elijah Moore when we return. All right, good morning. It's going to rain later and
cloudy
almost every day for the next like 5 days. That's fine.
Bit of a washout.
We're not yet at the time of year where it rains and we can all look and say, like, we needed this rain. We're still at the time of the year where we say we definitely do not need more rain.
We need the sun.
More sun. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Thursday. May 1st, Derby week. May 1st.
May's a great month.
Great. Is it a great month?
Cinco de Mayo and all the playoffs and the weather is finally... The weather gets a little more consistent.
How many great months are there? I'll decide if May's a great month when you tell me how many great months there are.
October?
No. The number. Give me a number. How many are great? There are only 12. How many get to be considered great?
Four.
Four. Yeah, October. Four. June.
Okay.
September.
Sure.
I got one more.
I think May might be next.
I mean, I might want to go July.
It's a little warm.
Yeah.
It's a little warm in July.
803-0550. We're learning about Elijah Moore.
John, when's Memorial Day?
May.
Yeah.
It's always
May.
In May.
May's number four.
Yeah. Elijah Moore. New Bills receiver Elijah Moore. We're going to get to John Butchko, Locked On Jets, on Elijah Moore. We talked to a Browns guy about Moore. He had a quick stop there. Now he's coming here to Buffalo. But he was drafted by the Jets not long ago. John, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. So what happened with Elijah Moore? There must have been a lot of hope, an early pick of the second round, and it just never really came to work there in New York.
There was a lot of hope. When the Jets picked him, they spent a lot of time hyping him up. I remember that first training camp. They talked about how he was turning heads, and it really did not work in any way. He struggled to stay healthy. When he was healthy, he did not produce in a big way. There were also issues with the way he related to the coaching staff. I mean, there was in 2022, the Jets got off to a pretty hot start, and that's something that's not been common in recent Jets history. They started 5-2. They were on a four-game winning streak, and in the middle of that winning streak, there was a game where the Jets won in Green Bay, but Moore spoke out. He was frustrated that he wasn't getting targets, and later that week, there was an incident at practice where he was sent home and deactivated for the next game. And these were kind of like the first signs that he was not long for the Jets. They drafted him early in the second round in 2021, and after 2 years, they sent him off to Cleveland for a day 2 pick swap. So, I mean, I think that speaks to how poorly things went during his career in New York.
Is that a period where everything's going poorly in New York? Because I feel like one thing Bills fans might be counting on is, you know, here things generally go well and the offensive game goes well. And to come from Cleveland and the Jets, whether he did everything right or did everything wrong, I guess I would ask, was the ecosystem in place to succeed?
Well, you know, Garrett Wilson put up 1,000 yards in the same year where Moore really struggled. So it was a difficult situation. Obviously, you know, Zach Wilson did not pan out for the Jets. There were lots of issues with the team, but it's tough for me to say the situation was the problem when there was another young receiver who thrived in that exact same situation.
John with us on the Wester Hotline on Elijah Moore. In terms of the type of player, and I guess how much on the field was the letdown? A lot about off field and things that happen and the role. And it's tough, I know, right, to separate it from the quarterback situation. But how much of a letdown was he when he was actually on the field and running routes?
It was disappointing. You know, like I said, the Jets really hyped him up as a budding star. The thing about Moore is that, you know, he's kind of undersized. So you make up for that with speed. He's fast, but I think like the way the Jets portrayed him as he was going to be like the next Deshaun Jackson, where his size just wouldn't matter because he was just that fast. It's not that he's slow. Like he's a fast receiver, but I don't think he has like the type of speed that like helps you overcome it to a large extent. I think that, you know, he's okay. He's an okay route runner. He's not a particularly dynamic route runner. The interesting thing about him is that with his size, there was a lot of talk that the Jets should play him in the slot exclusively, but he actually was more productive on the outside, at least during his time in New York. So, I mean, he's okay. I mean, I'm not saying he was a complete zero, but he was kind of like a supporting card. He was more like a guy who produced like a number three receiver than like the number one receiver the Jets kind of were hoping he would be.
When it comes to the Jets, the rest of it, you know, we're talking about Elijah Moore a little bit, but how about the draft they just had? Is it going over well? And as they start to try and turn things to the future, the Aaron Rodgers era, of course, is over. So what's the identity of the new look Jets as they begin the Aaron Glenn era?
The first round picks being very well received. That was Armand Membu out of Missouri, and he was kind of the last piece that they needed on the offensive line. The Jets entered this offseason with really four of their five offensive line slots settled, which is unusual if you follow the Jets over the last decade, because the offensive line's usually been a mess, and typically they head into an offseason, they need to replace like three of the five players. This year, right tackle was really the only question. They lost Morgan Moses to New England in free agency. I think getting Membo really solidifies that line. And now you have five offensive linemen, four of whom are still on their rookie contract, four of whom are either first or second round draft picks. So the line's looking good. The real question right now, the real issue is with the skill group. Justin Fields is a giant question mark at quarterback. At receiver, you have Garrett Wilson, and then really not a whole lot else. You have decent young backfield with Breece Hall, Isaiah Davis, and Braylon Allen. So you know, the offense, I think, is partially built. I think the offensive line is now complete based on the draft the Jets had. The defense has some talent, too. I think the real question with the Jets right now is the skill group.
On the running back backfield, we're having a little bit of this right now because James Cook is tweeting about $15 million a year and he wants to be paid like one of the top running backs in the league. Is there any of that in New York? Because Breece Hall would obviously be going into the final year. Contract-wise, whether they'll pay him, just play out the year, I couldn't imagine trade would be a thought right now, but where are they at on Hall?
It's very wait and see right now. At this point, it seems like they may wait to play out the year. There really has not been much contract talk about Breece Hall. There are a couple of the other players that were drafted the same year as him. There have been rumblings about Sauce Gardner or Garrett Wilson getting a new deal. But with Hall, it's really been pretty quiet. Really, the only rumblings about him were theoretically if the Jets had drafted Ashton Jeanty in the first round, there was talk maybe that situation they would look to deal him, but it's actually been kind of quiet, and I expect that to change after the draft. There hasn't been much buzz about what Hall's looking for, so I'm interested to see that myself.
John Butchko, Locked On Jets. John, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
All right. On the Jets and on Elijah Moore and why it didn't work there. Who's the player that it didn't work here, and we would say that wasn't good, and then he went on and had success in the last 8 years? You wouldn't say Wyatt Teller for that. Wyatt Teller never really got on the field. It's not like it was a problem. This would be like if Kyer Elam had some success, right?
Right.
Elam is taken late first, and Elijah Moore is taken early second.
It's like the difference, like six picks.
Yeah, so this might be somebody calls and asks about Elam. You might say, we saw some flashes, and there might be an indication, but it really never worked. He was never on the field. They never trusted him.
Yep.
So good luck. We saw a little bit of what he could do. Is that the only name? Is it Elam? And that's it?
Right, he hasn't done it yet. I guess that would kind of be... Has Zach Moss had a better career since he's left?
He's been fine.
He's gotten starting jobs.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't terrible when he was here, but he definitely wasn't... I mean, wouldn't anybody say he was good while he was here?
He was fine.
So that doesn't really qualify for this.
All right, 803-0550.
There might not be a great answer to it. Tremaine Edmonds has been kind of the same.
Yeah.
Hasn't he? Elam would be it. If Elam goes to Dallas and he is even, what's the bar? If he's just a starter.
A starting corner
in the league. That's
who
it.
PFF grades as fine.
Yeah.
He was not that here.
See, the thing,
well,
though...
Well, PFF graded him as fine here, I should say. Never mind.
No, they did. They liked, there were a lot of numbers that pointed to him. It wasn't that bad when he was on the field, except for that last game, and like two others. But the thing about if he does work in Dallas, I've pointed to them actually for a couple of years. Remember when Dan Quinn is their defensive coordinator, that team wants their corners to be so boom or bust. Think of Trayvon Diggs and... Deron Bland, these guys who have all these interceptions and all these pick sixes. Elam, he'll be one of these guys where even if he goes to Dallas and he starts making plays, it's going to be boom or bust. There are going to be advanced numbers that probably show, well, he's getting beat over the top a lot. So, yes, he's got five interceptions on the year, but how good is he? So, I feel like that's the best case scenario for Elam. But if he does that, then he would be an example of this, that they got more out of him than the Bills did.
803-0550. We owe you Worst Call Wednesday, Pick of the Week, Jerry Ostrowski on the Bills draft, and the linemen they pick. What he thinks of those guys coming up at the top of the hour. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Time for the pick of the week. The pick of the week is brought to you by Riverfront Auto Sales. We're going to pick a horse for the Derby, and I think we're going to have one that's an official Derby horse that is the official horse of the morning show. If you guys have not seen the field, we'll go through it real quick.
I haven't. I'm excited to hear it.
All right, good. Well, pick of the week's brought to you by Riverfront Auto Sales. Looking for luxury without the luxury price tag? This week's pick at Riverfront. 2018 Genesis G80 3.8 liter all-wheel drive. Style meets performance with all-wheel drive, premium features, and a smooth ride that turns heads. This Genesis delivers comfort and class at a price you'll love. But hurry, it won't last long. Riverfront Auto Sales, where great deals drive away fast. 1379 Niagara Street, call 716-886-1626. Okay, the Derby field. Here are your horses in the Kentucky Derby.
Okay.
And we can decide if there's one that jumps out that we should make the pick.
Okay.
I think there is one that will jump out. The game is, you know, will America get behind one horse because of the name?
Mm-hmm.
What was one? There was one like Jerk, He's a Jerk, or a couple. Well, every couple of years, there's one that the entire country decides, like, oh, him, Happy Hour, or something like that.
Yeah.
So here we go. Citizen Bull, Neowequus, Final Gambit, Rodriguez, American Promise, Admire Daytona, Luxor Cafe.
What was that last one?
Luxor Cafe.
Luxor Cafe.
Journalism. Journalism is the favorite.
Yeah, that's right.
Journalism. Journalism. Burnham Square. Grande. Flying Mohawk. East Avenue. Publisher. Tiztastic.
Journalism versus publisher?
Yeah, I guess.
Continue.
Right. Render Judgment. Coal Battle. Sandman. Sovereignty. Chunk of Gold. And finally, Owen Almighty.
Oh,
there we go.
Yeah,
we got our horse.
Owen Almighty. That has to be
30-1. Owen Almighty. That's the pick.
Long odds. I like it.
Let's go.
I like it.
30-1.
Chunk of Gold.
They used to call me Owen Almighty when I used to stop people in the North American Hockey League.
Playing
goalie down in the middle of nowhere, Corpus Christi or Shreveport.
The Shreveport Mud Bugs, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's
they
crazy.
Had they had their rink setup was insane. I loved playing there. They had, instead of suites like up above in the bowl of an arena, it was a big arena. They had on the glass lining the whole rink couches with fridges full of beer. It
wow.
was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That, I mean, that's how you sell hockey
that's
in the market.
That's how you sell the Mud Bugs.
Exactly.
Did the Sabres do that?
Undefeated in that building, I was.
Nice.
They should put a banner up that says Owen Almighty.
They should.
Retire his number. But it's got to say Owen Almighty, of course. That's the nickname.
Shreveport. There you go. There's your Derby field.
The name. Journalism is the favorite?
Yeah.
Okay.
3-1.
Never bet the favorite.
That's what they say.
Never bet the favorite.
The Derby is also a fun exercise in who's going to be there making picks.
Oh, like on the broadcast?
Yeah, Eddie Olczyk. Gamble,
always Eddie O.
Gamble all day with Eddie Olczyk.
Listen.
One of those scenarios.
You know Eddie Olczyk is going to be at that thing, like, no matter what.
And tomorrow, we'll have Nick the Railbird on from Batavia Downs to talk about, like, Derby picks, what we're going to do like we normally do. So, Derby picks coming tomorrow, 9:30. We'll do that. Be a good time. That's your pick of the week. The Derby is the pick of the week.
I do like Derby. Derby Day's great.
It's a fun day.
Yeah.
803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Jerry Ostrowski, former Bills offensive lineman. He'll join us on the other side. We'll chat about this Bills draft class, get a little bit more on Deion Walker, TJ Sanders, what the Bills have done here. He's talking Bills pretty much every day, and he'll join us coming up here on WGR.